Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Welcome to the Leaf Report. This is Clark here. Hello, everybody.
All right, James, good day. It's an exciting day on the podcast because we have a guest we haven't actually had on before. And he's like, I was thinking about it like in the days leading up to this, knowing that he was coming on. Like, he is a, if you know the Leafs and anybody listening to this podcast obviously does, you know this person. But I want to say our guest is going to be Paul Hendrick. Anybody, again, who Henny tweets knows Paul Hendrick. But like, I just want to tell people before Paul comes on, when you and I first started covering the team, when we were a little younger, Paul is like, he is no ego. Like, he is the nicest person like you could draw up as someone who's been around the team, like a legendary person around the team. There's like, he just makes you feel comfortable right away. Like when I started covering the team, I was traveling with them. And there's like a little group of media that travels with the team, and Paul, like Dennis Bayak, Jim Ralph, Mark Askin, like these guys really go out of their way to make you feel comfortable. I don't know if you have any memories of Paul Hendrick, like from starting off covering the team or anything that comes to mind. Puns?
I don't know which ones he wants us to tell and doesn't want us to tell. I mean, Paul's kind of like the dad of the beat, isn't he? Like, you were covering the Leafs when you were in like your early 20s, and I was in my late 20s when I started, and you know, still the young guys there. And I don't know, you call him the elder statesman, or but
the dad is good.
He's like the dad, but he's like the fun dad or the fun uncle or something. Like he's got, you know, lots of jokes. He likes to drink beer. He likes to go to good restaurants. He loves to eat candy. He's always got lots of candy that he's given out to everybody. And you know, the puns and stuff that you see on Twitter and that, he's always making those in person. Like, how many morning skates have you been to where, you know, like you're probably exhausted because either you traveled the night before or you stayed out too late or whatever, and you haven't had enough sleep and you haven't had like a good meal or whatever, and you're just sitting in the rink and you're like, you know, feeling like, I don't know if I want to be here today in Newark or whatever. And there's Henny tweets sitting in the stands saying some ridiculous pun about Clark MacArthur or something, and like, I don't know, he's just like, I think everyone has those people that when they make going to work easier or more fun or whatever. And he, you know, I'm not from Toronto, so I didn't really know Paul before I moved to the city. I mean, it seems like he's kind of been an institution for a lot longer than, you know, the last 12 years that I've gotten to know him. I mean, I'm guessing, like, did you see him on TV and stuff when you were growing up, Jonas?
Oh, yeah. Oh yeah, 100%. And like, to your point, he is a morale booster, and I want to bring him on in like 1 second. I just want to remind people he has a new podcast. It's called The First Question. Like, he just already has like everyone. He's had Luke Shen, Darcy Tucker, Matt Stajan, John Michael Lyles, like Brian Burke, Ken Dryden, Bob McKenzie, James Duthie. Anyway, you should listen to that. But Paul, do you have any puns like to bring that we should bring you on with?
You know what, Beagle? I was
that I can make fun of you for and shake my head.
It's like I was thinking about a bald guy named Bill, and the old line: "If you have bills to pay, bring it back because he needs it." Anyway, that's all I've got now off the bat. Thanks for those kind words, James. Both you guys, it's great to hear from you because I miss you both dearly in all that we got to do at one point in time. But Beagle, you mentioned that podcast. I can't believe how busy that's kept me going and the opportunity just to keep the cobwebs scattered. It's been a blessing in many ways, but I'm on a bit of a hiatus. I was saying to Punch, you know, the producer, I've got 5 in the can already, and it's just good to get a break and not read a hockey book and just sort of air out a little bit. But the podcast has been fun in many, many ways.
So, Paul, this is our podcast, and we usually just nerd out on the Leafs, and we've been doing it for 8 or 9 years. But since you're our guest, we actually want to give you the first question, so go for it.
Hey, my first question would be just how legit is this Maple Leaf team compared to the one we have seen in the last 4 years? And I'd be interested to hear what you guys have to hear, given that core, of course, is now going into its 5th year and certainly a little more depth on the blue line. What do you think?
I think on paper, this should be the best Leafs team. I think. Maybe not, you know, dramatically better than what we've seen in the past. But I think that it's a more complete team given what they've got on the blue line this year.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I mean, the talent has always been there. Like, these teams, they've had issues obviously on defense and sometimes in goal, but like the talent has always been there with this particular group. But like, I do think we're going to see a different team because like their core guys are just a little bit older and more experienced. And like, I expect Marner to be better and Nylander to be better. And like even Matthews, like I think this is probably the year he starts pushing into that Hart Trophy conversation. Like if the Leafs had a better year last year, he probably gets there. How do you feel about the changes that they've made, Paul?
Well, I like the depth, Beagle, especially on the blue line. I know when Jake Muzzin went out last summer against Columbus, I knew they were done. And with all due respect to Justin Hall, who's just made such a great transformation after, you know, Babs had made him a healthy scratch for 71 games 2 years ago, to do what he did on that top pairing, just to be there was quite a climb and certainly a credit to him. But I think if the Leafs are to be in a good spot, Justin should be on your third pairing right side. And I think that would be a comfortable spot for him. Very good skater. All of these things. A talented hockey player. But I just think the Leafs are going to be better, obviously, given who they've acquired, who's going to play alongside Morgan. Zach Bogosian, I think, just adds a little Roman Polak kind of influence on that back line, something they haven't had in spades. But at least now they've got a bit of a physical presence there. I also think that there's going to be great expectations now on that elite group up front. But when you bring in a Simmons, when you bring in a Jumbo Joe, these guys are going to help in that room to keep everyone in check, intact. John Tavares is a leader as well. But these other veterans that they brought in, and even keeping Jason Spezza, I think are going to keep that group grounded as the expectations continue to rise. Because even though you might be acclimated with what is expected, playing in Toronto, there are very few other cities in the National Hockey League where the expectations, even when the team isn't good, are as high as they are. So I'm optimistic that the additions of that veteran help, and of course just the additions on the blue line. And the other thing is Freddie Anderson going into a contract year. There's nothing like that kind of carrot being dangled, especially with the group in front of you being better than what it has been in the past to help motivate results. And in a division that'll be competitive, but I don't think as tough when you're not seeing as often Boston or Tampa as Toronto had previously. Just my 2 cents worth anyway.
Yeah, that's I think that's fair, and that kind of leads me into one thing I really wanted to ask you about is you've covered a lot of Leaf teams, and you've covered some that were in the same sort of contender status as this one, like those early 2000s, late 90s teams, mid 90s. And I wondered like how it's changed in terms of like the expectations you feel around the team, what it's like to cover this team versus like covering those Matt Sundin teams. Like, how is it different now as opposed to like 20 years ago?
Social media, Beagle, is one of the most incredible things. I remember, you know, years ago when you were flying with us on the Leaf charter and my younger kids, I'd show you my phone and I'd say, what do they mean by this? And you were able to translate the jargon. I had no idea. So, I mean, that's a small sample size, but I think social media, there's just, everyone's a blogger. We all have podcasts. Some are better than others, but everybody's got an opinion on this hockey club. Now, that said, that elite group is getting paid well enough to handle all of those expectations. But regardless, when you step onto the ice, you're not thinking about a paycheck, and you're just thinking about performance and winning. But to compare back to those Sundin era teams, especially that Pat Quinn coached in late 1990s and early 2000s, those teams had so much leadership. You look around the room, and beyond Matt's, I mean, there's Joe Neuendijk, there's Gary Roberts, Steve Thomas. I mean, I could go on and on. And that's why I sort of hearken back to the additions that Kyle's been able to make this past offseason by enhancing that room and allowing those younger kids. All those previous guys I've mentioned were all in their early to mid-30s. The core talent group here, with exception of JT, these guys are all 21, 22, 23, on the verge of turning 24. Old enough, but still very young in terms of comparing to the age standards of that Pat Quinn veteran team that also included Brian Leetch, Ron Francis. I mean, I can go on and on. So this is still a young team, but unlike Pat Quinn's day when I knew they could just add salary, I think 03, 04, that one trade deadline that they got Dougie Gilmore for the short time that they had him, I think they may have been close to $76 million at that point. So there were no restraints. It was just an untethered bank account, whereas now you're given a window in terms of 4 or 5 year contracts, and boy oh boy, you've got to make hay while the sun shines, while you've still got these key guys under contract. And so the pressure is not 5 to 10 years from now, it's now.
Yeah, I mean, this is really, this is, you know, last season was kind of, there was some pressure, but I think this year is going to be a whole new level of that. I mean, Paul, if you look at the changes and you look at where they're at, what would you identify as perhaps the biggest reason for concern with this team from your perspective?
Oh, it's a legit question, James. I'm such a glass half filled kind of guy. I've got to sort of step away.
We get to interview you here, so we get to put you on the spot.
Yeah, but that's a legitimate question.
Well, what do you think might potentially hold them back? You know, if you look at, you know, they lose Johnsson, they lose Kapanen, and some people are saying, are they going to get enough offense?
You know what? I like the balance they've got on the third and fourth line. Maybe it's if it's going to be keeping everybody healthy. You know, Hyman's been outstanding, and he should stay where he is on the left side. It wouldn't surprise me to see Jumbo Joe move up on with Matthews and Marner at some point in time and play that left side, give him a little sniff and all of these things. But I think more or less, unless it's a power play, he'll be predominantly third line. Again, I like the balance. I'm trying to come up with some sort of...
Here, I'll give you one.
Yeah,
I'll ask
one.
You a question. James, like, let's be specific. What do you expect for Frederik Andersen? Like, obviously...
That would be the one.
Go well for him. Yeah, like, that, to me, that's the big one.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting. You know, if you look at the Leafs, I was looking at the last couple of years. If you look at not just Andersen, but the points that they've generated from their backup goaltenders have been... it's been a real problem. You know, their record when the backup's been in the net is below 500. I mean, it's basically, it's something like a 77 point pace or something like that since Curtis McElhinney left. And that hurts them. I mean, I think that we would probably be talking about the Leafs in a different light if they had had really good backup goaltending and support goaltending behind Anderson the last couple of years. So it's not just Anderson this coming season. They need Jack Campbell to be something. And Jonas and I have talked about this a lot, but he's only started, I think, 57, 58 games in the NHL in his career, and he's in his late 20s. So he's a huge wild card this season.
He is. And I guess the key, you remember, you know, James going into those rooms and Jonas said, you know, how many games do you think you can play, Frederick? And, you know, obviously he'd get somewhat irritated by that because he's a big guy. He's trained and he wants to be seen as the guy who can go a long way. But 56 game season, it's not 82. I think this is going to be a bit of a sprint, and for Leafs Nation, knock on wood, that Frederick is able to stay healthy. But it's a bit of an unknown if they've got to go with Campbell for an extended period of time, and then I think all cards are off the table. But you look back, it was one little sample size of David Ayres coming into that game for Carolina and just how hard that team played in front of him to limit Toronto, I think, to 9 shots. Granted, I think the first couple went in, but he was pretty good after that, but he didn't see much. I just think the core up front is better, and that might be good for Jack Campbell in the event that Frederick is to go down. But again, the other aspect is this isn't an 82-game season. It literally is going to be 110 meters or 100 meters out of the gate, and well within his scope of games being played. So, to get back to your question initially, James and Beagle, you're right. If there's a lack of depth in any area, and most teams can ill afford to lose their starting goaltender. God bless Columbus and what they did last year. But most teams would not be able to get through that. And I think we would include the Leafs in that because if Campbell had to go for an extended period of time, it's a bit of a question mark.
Well, Henny, I think Anderson is really interesting because we've found, like, just writing about the goalies, that there's, like, generally a reluctance in the fan base to overly criticize the goalie. Mm-hmm. And yet I think what's interesting with Anderson is before last year, he'd put together three really pretty solid years. Obviously, yep. The playoffs were up and down. But I think it's interesting, like, when you look back to Belfour and you look back to Joseph, the fan base really, like, wrapped their arms around those guys in a way that hasn't happened yet. And I wondered if you have any thinking as to why that is, like, why he doesn't feel the same way that Joseph does. Maybe it's just the playoff runs. Maybe it's as simple as that.
Yeah, and you're right. And until the Leafs get to that point in time where you've not won a series, you know, opinion's going to be mixed. But it's interesting. Eddie Belfour, when he initially came to Toronto, I remember, I think it was a game in Buffalo, let in his first shot. We went to Ottawa for a preseason game and actually stayed, I think, the night before. But we were staying, Pat Quinn likes staying at the old hotel, so we were at the Chateau Laurier. And traffic from the Chateau downtown out to Kanata is god-awful at about 4:15. About 4:15 would have been the team bus. And the bus didn't get in until about 6:20. And I remember Stone Cold Dave Griffiths just sort of pulling out what hair he had left because Pat was chewing on the gum. He was just literally so pissed off. And Eddie went in nets that night and was horrendous, especially early on. The team had no legs. They just weren't ready. But Eddie eventually settled down and obviously, I think that year went on to win club record 37 games, tying him with
Razor.
Former Boston goaltender, played for
Andrew
the Wellington.
Raycroft.
Andrew Raycroft, exactly.
Record holder.
Like, here I am mentioning Wellington Dukes. But anyway, he obviously went on to do well. But then, and even with social media being not even close to what it was, they wanted to hang Eddie's effigy. So it's still not easy. But Cujo, his just ability to play, his athleticism, not as compact and positionally sound as Eddie Belfour was, they loved him right from the get-go and by rights. So to get back to Frederick, I just think they've got to go on a bit of a roll. And we've known Freddie long enough to see him that when he's great, he's near perfect. But every now and then, like all of us, you get into a bit of a bad way and you can see those goals going in short side and low, and you're wondering, wow, how in God's name did that go in? But he was, you know, just having either a bad night or a bad few couple of games. I just think he's going to get the chance to run hard and quick with the schedule being as quick as it is. And if able to stay healthy, very, very motivated by this contract year of his in terms of setting up what he might be able to make next season.
Henny, I was going to change gears a little bit. Jonas and I were talking off the top. I don't know how much you heard of it, but we were talking about how you kind of have become an institution around the Leafs. I mean, when did you first start hanging around the team, and kind of like, do you have any stories from the early days that you remember? What was your first season around the team?
Yeah, thank you. It was for a Canadian sports network, and of course, games were on CHCH at the time. So right. We're going back to the early mid '80s.
Oh, nice.
You know, getting to interview Harold Ballard, who was just a gentleman, King Clancy, getting to see these guys, and it was a lot different. And I remember walking in to cover a practice, and you know, venerable Frank Orr coming over to me with the styrofoam coffee cup and the very dry sense of humor. And of course, I'm just in honor of this guy. And he now lives just up the street from where I am. And I do see him from time to time. He's retired. His wife, unfortunately, passed away, I think about a year and a half ago. So he's on his own right now. And these are difficult times. But I remember him taking me under his wing and just how kind and generous he was. And the scrums weren't like they are now, or at least used to be a year from now or last year. And he really made me feel welcome. And that's something I'll never, ever forget. You know, beyond Frank, just the simplicity of going down and covering the team. And literally, there might have been Gail Mugford, cameraman from Global, you know, a few others via CBC, CFTO would stop in. But it was really limited compared to what we've seen here today. And it was kind of unique. It was kind of cozy, as opposed to us getting into that room knowing Austin's going to be coming up and all of us trying to get a point in on the potential scrum. We're all very good with each other, and that's a really good group that we get to work with, or at least I got to work with. But it was a lot simpler back in the Gardens days back then. And I think we had an opportunity then to get to know the players a little better than we do now, because we're able to sit down with them in a stall or by their bench and just talk. I know we can do that with a bunch of the guys now. Travis Dermott, they're really good people, but it was a lot easier back then. I think that might be the biggest thing, James.
Well, James, as you know, one of the best things about Paul is everyone seems to live around the corner. Like, he knows everyone.
Damn right.
He knows their cousin or their brother. That's one of my favorite things.
Everyone lives in Loren Park, I guess. Is that how it works?
Yeah. But so, Paul, I have a two-part question, yeah, because I want to hit on two things that you mentioned there. One, like, I read books about some of the Ballard years, and you said he's like a gentleman. I wondered, A, if you have like a really good Harold Ballard story. And two, who was like the first coach that you covered?
Yeah. Well, for the Maple Leafs, first coach would have been Pat Burns.
Wow.
Yeah, it was Burnsy. And he scared the death out of me. And I started telling tales out of school. Pat wasn't a big fan of Mark Hepscher's, and this is all due respect to Mark. Mark's a keen, hard guy. I don't want to speak badly of him, but I remember in Winnipeg at the Fairmont Hotel after a game, and we're all, you know, invited down for a beer. I was part of that sort of group, but I wasn't. I was just covering the team for 15 games until Jim Taddy and Global came on mid-December. But Gord Stellick and I were there. Gordy didn't come down at that point, but I remember coming into the bar and Burnsy just saying, "Sit right here. I want you to sit right here," because Mark would have been coming down and Burnsy just didn't want to have to deal with him. Maybe Mark was just so intense. And he's like, "Sit right here. Sit right here." And there I'm, you know, I'm seated beside Pat Burns and just sort of like, what do I say now? Trying to be conversational. And even that game in Winnipeg, I think there's a bit of a celebrity fan, celebrity Dancing Gabe. He's the Winnipeg Blue Bomber games, but in the Winnipeg Jets of that era, he would always be in the stands doing his little dance. And I remember Mark asking our producer, saying, you know, "Go up there, talk to Gabe, do a little dance." And I was doing a little thing on camera as we went to commercial, you know, cutting some carpet, as you would say, with Dancing Gabe. Well, anyway, I'm walking back down to the Leaf room afterwards in that period. And I remember Pat Burns under his breath walking by me, goes, "Goddamn dancing fool." So Pat would have seen me from the bench to the whole upper concourse across the way of not only focusing on the game, but watching what I was doing. So Pat Burns was the first coach, and he was a very intimidating guy if you didn't know him, but boy, oh boy, what a dear, dear man. Pat Quinn, so fantastic. I mean, Nick Beverly was in there, another gentleman as well, Mike Murphy. And then things changed, obviously, when Pat Quinn came on board. Kenny Dryden came over. They get Cujo and Nets and just were able to go from there. And we had that magical run in 98, 99 and onward. But those are the coaches I remember. And Paul Maurice, another outstanding guy to talk with. I know Ron Wilson didn't get along with everyone in the media, and announcing his contract on Christmas morning literally pissed off a lot of people. But I had a good relationship with Ron. He had a dry, dry sense of humor, and he loved toying with the media. I remember a time, we were in Ottawa, and I don't know if you were there, Beagle, but, you know, the starting goaltender usually is first off in the morning skate. Well, he had Jonas...
Gustafsson?
Yeah, Gustafsson. This is off because I'm just
Monster.
The Monster come on. He had him come off first. So everybody thought, of course, the Monster was starting that night. But no, James Reimer, who stayed out late to work with the Aces, he started that night. And this was all a plan by Ron just to have some fun with the media. Of course, they weren't too. But we knew about it, but we had to keep our mouth shut. We knew about it for our pregame show links that we had to shoot that morning in Ottawa. But that was the mischievous kind of guy that Ron Wilson is and was. And I mean, I chuckle about it, but if you weren't on his side, it might have been difficult to deal with. And then Randy Carlyle. I remember ripping into me, and it was a game in New Year's where Leafs lost Kadri, Lupel, and Holland. And a game they won in Boston. Flew New Year's Eve to Minnesota. Had 2 days off prior to playing Minnesota. And I remember it was a small, small scrum, and Kadri didn't skate at all that morning. And it's getting ready. I'm looking around, and you never ask Randy who his starting goaltender was going to be. Paul Hollingsworth found that out in Detroit a few years later, or not later, previous. But I said, "Could you just give us an update on Nazem?" And he ripped into me, and I remember saying to Steve Keogh, Toronto's PR chief, who as is now, and I said, "Steve, was I wrong there?" I said, "We had to ask, or I had to ask just for my own credibility." And Randy wasn't too keen about it, and Nazem wasn't playing, and Leafs lost that night, and we flew to Winnipeg that night, and then the next day was back-to-back against the Jets. And I remember at the Fairmont getting coffee at 6 o'clock in the morning, like, I mean, I'm just so tired, and I turn around, and there's Randy. And I go, "What was that all about?" And he goes, "I guess you've never been talked to like that." And I said, "Well, Pat Quinn ripped into me once, but he apologized to me on the plane right afterwards." And it was a game the Leafs lost in Philadelphia on a rather suspect call. Pat wasn't very fond of the officials. But in Randy's case, I said, "Randy, I had to ask you. I had to ask you." Anyway, we had a chuckle about it, and we're good. I saw him, ironically, driving through Manitoulin Island this past summer, and my wife was saying, we're at an outdoor cafe, and my wife's saying, "Somebody over there, I think he knows who you are." And I turned over, I said, "That's Kitty Carlisle." We had a good chance to chat, and we were all good. But, you know, there's some tough coaches to get along with, but for the most part, I was blessed from Pat Burns all the way on. To Mike Babcock and of course, Sheldon Keefe, who is a perfect gentleman. And you wish them all well. And I can say on two fingers how many mishaps I had. And one was a miniature one with Pat Quinn. And Pat apologized right afterwards because he was just speaking in the heat of the moment. And, you know, we're in the front lines there. And the other was with Randy Carlyle. And Randy, ironically, after the loss in Winnipeg that night, was dismissed 2 days later on the Tuesday morning. That game was on the Saturday. So I can look back to all of those times, and I'm probably going on too long here. But it started with Pat Burns and ended with Sheldon. And I think nine coaches altogether, and I can easily say they were all outstanding to me.
You can really see it
just the pressure that the coach is under in Toronto and how it wears on them. And I think that in some cases with these, you know, hard mm-hmm. hockey men who have been around the game for so long, you know, I think it was the case with Ron Wilson and Randy Carlyle. It kind of brought out the worst in them sometimes, where they were just wearing it every day. Yeah. And
it's a lot, James. Like, it's a lot to, like, every single day.
Yeah.
Just talk about everything with the team. Like, and you're getting asked about, like, every yeah. player every day.
They're prideful guys, and to have a camera on you and people are kind of picking at everything. Like, there were a lot of times, you know, I would ask Ron Wilson something and I was writing a positive story about someone, but he would think I was doing a negative story. Yeah. So he would kind of like, I remember one time I asked him about Francois Beauchemin, who at the time was on the trade block, and I was actually writing a really positive story that here's all the value that this guy brings to the team. But Ron thought that I was another person that was like, you know, and he just kind of went off the handle a little bit and got really upset. And I don't know. It's just, you could really see, like, Mike Babcock, I think, with the media and everything, was able to kind of ride those ups and downs a little bit more. And it seems like Sheldon Keefe's going to be able to do that too. But just with Ron and Randy, they're kind of, I don't know if it's their temper or what it is, but it wore them down over time, being in the spotlight in Toronto day after day.
Yeah, do you remember, James, Dave Poulin, who was the assistant general manager, he would be in the back of Ron's post-game press conferences just to monitor how things were going. So it was obviously a concern from management back then. And, you know, we're on one side and you've got the other side, meaning the coaching staff. And to have to go up there and try to answer questions, knowing your hockey club isn't quite as good as it should be, and you're doing your best to get them to where you want them to get with what you've got, and on a lot of nights it was limited. That's why I think about this team and what Sheldon has. I think this is the most talented top two lines that this club has ever had. Now, are they going to the Hall of Fame like a lot of those older Leaf teams? And we'll see. Time will certainly tell. But to look at the individual talent that Sheldon has to work with on those top two lines, I think is unparalleled in franchise history. I mean, Mitch Marner, John Tavares, Austin, Willie. I mean, those are four elite players. Then you look at William, who certainly gets carved left and right, but you look back at the season that he had last year, pretty damn good. And he's a year older. I think you hold on to guys like that. Cappy, for maybe various reasons, was deemed expendable, but it opened up some cap that they needed to do. And I love Cappy as a person and all else, but this is business. And seeing Mango, Andreas Janssen go, that's another tough one, especially in Andreas's case, because that's a guy you drafted seventh round and developed and, mm-hmm. and watched him be as dominant as he was in 2018, winning that memorial, that Calder Cup for the Marlies. So I just think Sheldon's got the cookie jar is loaded well. And and now they've got some depth on the blue line, and I think they've got a chance in this Canadian division to get better, to get confidence grown, and we'll see where they're at come the spring and what COVID allows us all to do. But I think he's in a position to succeed, and Kyle's been able to provide him with a lot of the tools necessary in which to succeed.
All right, let's take a quick break, and then I want to ask Paul about that Pat Quinn interaction.
Awesome.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
All right. So, Paul, you mentioned a little skirmish, a rare one with Pat Quinn. I just wanted to tell you, just because this came to my mind when you were mentioning it, there was a game in Washington when Ron Wilson was coaching the team. And I don't know what I asked, but I asked something that he didn't like, and he really snapped back.
Yeah.
And I remember walking to the bus and standing beside the bus with this like mischievous grin on his face was Greg Millen, and he was just laughing his ass off because he just thought it was so funny. Yeah. And he said to me, don't ask a question you know the answer to. And that was a good lesson. Like, I never forgot that. So I wondered, obviously, like, you remember these things, these little dust-ups. So what was the one with Quinn?
Well, and I remember, Beagle, you were somewhat shaken, and I don't blame you. I remember getting on Matt Sundin's wrong side once and pulling him aside at Lions Lakeshore a couple of days later to smooth out the waters. And it all worked out well. And oh, God, we can go on and on. But with Pat Quinn's situation, it was a game in Philadelphia. The Leafs, I think they lost it on a penalty in overtime. And it was a suspect call. And Pat, he did not like officials. This went back to the early days, even when Bobby Orr's fighting him in Boston after that big hit a game or two later. And he's trying to defend himself. And there's an official with his hand on his jersey and allowing Bobby to punch away. And missed calls. Stanley Cup final against the Islanders where an offside that should have been called wasn't called, led to a John Tinelli goal and really tilted the series in the Islanders' favor. And of course, the Islanders going to win the Stanley Cup. A few more instances as well, but Pat just was not a big fan of the officials. So they felt they'd cost him the game that night. And anyway, Pat was in, we're waiting down the hallway as we normally do, and Pat comes out of the office, that long walk, and he'd been going over it on video, I think with Reed Mitchell at the time, and that just reinforced that they'd been jobbed. And you know, first question is, I mean, it was the decision that tilted the whole game. Pat, what did you see on the call? How along the lines with how legitimate was that call in terms of deciding the hockey game? And Pat, I'll tell you, it could have been Mother Teresa who had asked him the question, and he would have ripped into her. And he just roared, and it was like, whoa. And you know how intimidating Pat can be just walking into a room. But he was one of the world's nicest men. So that was it. So anyway, we get on the plane that night, and I'm sort of, ooh. Then you walk up the stairs, turn the right-hand corner, and I think three seats in on the right-hand side on the aisle. That's where Pat sat. And as I'm walking by, I'm just trying to keep my head up high. That big hand comes out and grabs me by the forearm and looks up at me and said, apologize for my actions back there. I said, Pat, you did not need to apologize, but thank you for doing so. And I just went back to the end of the plane where I normally sat with Mark Askin. So that was the case.
All right. So, Paul, I have put the call out for some questions from our readers.
Yep.
Actually, I'm still waiting for some to come in here. Jonas, do you have one you can throw at him while we wait for some to come in?
I love the Quinn story. I just know what that's like. But I mentioned it earlier.
Yeah.
Is there any good Harold Ballard story?
Well, let me do one more Quinn. He starts with the team in the fall of 98, training camps in Hamilton. I'm doing games for the Toronto Maple Leafs via CHCH, but the fall of 98, I'd moved over to Molson Sports and Entertainment on a full-time basis. So, but at that point in time, I was still at Channel 11 and hosting our noon show where I did weather, sports, and whatever on-site location we were doing. And we had Pat to come on and talk with us. And as we get going, Pat just goes, my mother told me today to be very nice to Mr. Hendrick because he's a gentleman. And I'd done a lot of work with Pat's mom and dad, Jack and Jean Quinn. They danced the Geritol Follies were what they were called, an older group dance troupe who danced at senior citizens' homes. They had danced on live noon shows that we had done at Universal Studios the previous year. Jack wasn't dancing at that point because he wasn't feeling well, but Gene was still dancing. They were very active people. And so I'd had a relationship built up with his mom and dad. And I remember Pat with the big warm grin and the glint in his eye. My mother told me to be very nice to Mr. Hendrick, so I'm going to be nice to you. That's another thing I'll never forget. And of course, figure the intimidation factor of one Pat and Burns. To have Pat Quinn say that made me feel welcome right from the get-go. To get back about Harold, he reminded me an awful lot of my grandfather, Beagle. And I remember, I think Harold was diagnosed with diabetes at, I forget what stage of his life. You know, guys like Bob and Gord Stellick would certainly have that. But it seemed, you know, maybe later in the day, if Harold didn't have his orange juice or whatever it was to get that blood sugar count sort of going again, he could be a little erratic. But I just know from sitting down with him for Canadian Sports Network and doing a one-on-one, he was genuinely a really nice man and really reminded me of my grandfather, my dad's dad. And so he was good to be around. And I know a good close friend of his was Dick Beddoes, who was my boss at CHCH. And I remember Harold kicking Dick out of the gardens for something he'd said on CHCH. This was beyond Dick's days at the Globe and Mail. And Dick was shaken up, and it was big news. It was big news on local radio. And we didn't have sports radio back then, but it made the newscast that Harold had tossed Dick out of the gardens. And Dick was a season ticket holder, let alone a close friend of Harold's. And I remember Dick that night coming back, and he was shook. He was very shaken up about the whole situation. So I wasn't at the gardens for that, but if you could shake up Dick, obviously Harold had an impact, and it might have been a pretty loud session between those two that led to Dick getting banned from the gardens for the short term.
Okay, I got a really good reader question here. It's from Anthony Guzzo, whose Twitter handle is Domi Clark. So you know he's a big Leafs fan. He says, ask Kenny who his top three players to deal with. He also asked for your worst three players to deal with, but he also says, I don't think he's going to answer that one. So
no, and we don't need to. I'll tell you, I mean, dealing with hockey players, there are very, I mean, Paul Kariya was tough at one point in his career, elusive, but I'm not going to throw him under the bus because it might have been a moment in time.
Well, he's very introverted, right? So I think sometimes guys get a bad rap when it's just their personality doesn't lend themselves well to kind of on-camera interviews and the media side of things.
Yeah, I didn't have much time for Sean Avery, but I don't think I'm alone in that. And that could be more reflective of me than Sean. But let's dwell on the positive. Luke Shen is one of my favorite guys. And I've told the story a million times. And we had him booked for a game. First period interview, he's to come off the ice, and we got him. And we'd always booked these guys in the morning so that they knew that night they were coming on. Well, the Leafs had lost like six or seven in a row. Luke's on the ice for the first shift. Boom, Florida Panthers score. And these were the days Florida would come in. Florida and Islanders always used to come in on those Monday, Tuesday games and kick Toronto's ass. Leafs would be coming off a big win on Saturday night. And those first Monday, Tuesday games always seemed so anticlimactic. And then with about 40 seconds left in the first period, Luke's on the ice again. And Florida scores. And the Leafs are down 2-0. And Mark, in my ear, and we're getting ready to go live, he said, don't be surprised if Luke blows you off. And if he does, I'll just count you into commercial and we'll go to break. No big deal. I said, I doubt he's going to do that. And sure enough, he didn't. And I'm trying to put Luke in a position to succeed. I'm trying to make it as easy on him as possible without me losing any credibility. Because we had to talk about the elephant in the room. He was dash two right off the bat. The Leafs are looking like they're going to lose another game, seventh in a row, which they did. So I remember saying to Luke, you know, what's happened has happened. How do you and your teammates regroup over the course of the next 40 minutes to find a way to win tonight's game? And, you know, just take the pressure off him, yet still address the situation. And Luke, to his credit, said, what happened out there is on me. As soon as I'm done this, I've got to go into that room and apologize to each and every one of my teammates. I'll never forget that. He's just a class guy. Alan McCauley is another class guy. Steve Thomas, top of the world, class guy. I mean, I can mention five dozen of these guys, but, you know, off the top of my head, Luke and Alan just stand out. And, you know, you still get to see these guys to this day. And hockey and fame didn't change them in any way. They were still held to their roots, one from Gananoque, Ontario, the other from suburban Saskatoon. And as classy as they were as youngsters, still classy as young adults. And now in Luke's case, a Stanley Cup champion. So those are two. If I were to name a third, I mean, I can go on and on, but those front two guys, I think, say it all.
Well, James, I don't know if you remember, but Paul certainly would. Is I used to do the intermission interviews for radio, so Paul and I would be down there a lot together, and there were a couple guys who you could never get them. So one of them was Jason Blake. I actually like Jason Blake. I found him like interesting to deal with, but he would always say, if you requested him, I got to get my skates done. So that was one. I'm sure you remember that. And then the other was Nicholas Hagman would just say no. They would, okay. The PR guy would go to him, Nicholas, can you talk for a second? No. And then he would storm into the room every time.
That, you know what, we're talking about guys I didn't like to deal with? That might be the Lone Ranger on the Maple Leafs. He was just an arrogant, not very fun to deal with. And when he got sent out to Calgary in that deal for Dion, I'm not disappointed. And you know, I no longer work with the club, but I'm not alone in that respect. I just didn't think he was a very nice person. Just knowing how nice everybody else was in that room. He was
and Finns are usually nice.
Like, yeah, it's unusual.
Komarov was awesome to deal with.
Yeah. And even Leo would, you know, we'd come over, hey, Leo, do you have time to talk with us? And he'd go,
I don't have anything to say.
I don't have anything to say. But you knew he was a decent, decent guy.
Yeah,
and
totally.
These were the days. You remember that year they opened up with Francois and I think Mike Komisarek's first year? They opened up 0-6-1. Then they had 6 days off before they went on a trip that began in Vancouver and went all through California. I mean, Ronnie Wilson had the boys out on the Monday with tennis balls. It was just let's try to reinvent the wheel. They knew they were out of playoff contention, and we were still well into October. They were not going to dig from this hole. I remember going up to Frankie Beauchemin and saying, he looks at me, he goes, I have nothing to say. And I said, I have nothing to ask you. I mean, Beagle, you know, we walk into the room a lot of times and just go, hey, what's your angle today? We had a half hour show to do. You would have a specific story, but I would always be interested in tweaking others when my mind wasn't just into what. How can we storytell here in this particular situation? You know, usually in mid-January, you're just looking for some sort of angle that you haven't beaten up so many times. That's why the guys like Nazem Kadri was outstanding to go to.
Great.
Justin Hall, outstanding to go to. Jack Campbell, another good guy. Just so terrific. Kasperi Kapanen. You can go right down the list, Hyman and Zach Hyman, and there are a lot of classy guys with this group. And God bless Austin. You know, he's under the gun for so much and requested so many times. He works hard, and he'll work hard at thinking of a good answer. And if the question isn't quite good enough and you get a response that's under 3 seconds, you know you've got to rethink your question.
Did you get any Phil Kessel one-on-ones, Henny, like back in the day? Any sit-downs?
Yeah, Phil was tough. Of course, I remember the famous one, you know, Dave Festchuk talking to him. And,
yeah, that was a good one.
And I was just off to the side of that. But one-on-one, he was fine. I remember in the middle of summer, I was up in Collingwood, and a producer called and said, hey, can you come down? Phil's golfing at Thundering Waters or whatever it is in Niagara Falls, John Daly's course. John was literally flying back from the British Open. He'd flown overnight, and it was Girardi, Phil, John Daly, and there was some other NHL player from the Wellington Niagara Falls area, well in Niagara Falls area, and they were playing, I think it was 6 holes before the sun went down. And I see Phil, and it's Nicole Burns, Nicole Bean. And Phil looks at the two of us, and he's pointing at his watch, meaning, what are you doing here? I said, Phil, I had to leave a 27-degree day in Collingwood to come down here. I don't want to see you till September, but orders are orders. And as it turned out, Phil's golf cart broke, and he ended up riding, standing up, Nicole driving, me right beside Nicole, and Phil with his golf bag in our cart, and standing, riding roughshod as we went from, we caddied him basically for 5 holes. And he had a great sense of humor. His dad has got a dry wit about him. His dad played quarterback for the Calgary Stampeders, was cut by the Washington Redskins when Doug Williams was captain. Doug went on to win the Super Bowl that year. But Phil's mom and dad were outstanding athletes in their day. And no surprise that Phil's sister Chrissy and Chrissy
Amanda.
Mandel.
Amanda Kessel.
John Pohl's wife. But extremely, I'm meandering
wow,
on.
We're digging
but,
deep.
But anyway, Thundering Waters, like in their film, but just looking at his watch, he wasn't rude. He it's just he'd rather not have the publicity. I mean, Florida was a great spot for him. Arizona is a great spot for him. Even Pittsburgh, and it's but it's a small market compared to what Toronto is. But the Pens don't win those cups, I don't think, with what he was able to add once he got acclimatized to playing with Sid and fitting into that system, and they finally got an idea as to how to understand what Phil Kessel was all about.
Well, he almost won the Conn Smythe that one year. Like, he was...
Yeah.
He should have won the Conn Smythe.
Yeah.
But, you know, as cold as he was, or indifferent to the media, he was not Hagman. He was not Hagman. That's a category all onto itself, and I'm glad you brought that up, yeah. Beagle. He might be the one guy who we never had a run in, but he never left you warm and fuzzy, and we just tended to avoid him when it came time to doing interviews in that room.
Some guys like that, there's a reason they bounce around the league, right? Like some, you know, you can see it in person. Some guys, there's a reason why they don't. I'm pretty sure Hagman bounced around, right? Like especially towards the end there. So
yeah,
you get a reputation, and I have another
good hockey player.
Yeah, yeah, he was a good skater. Another question is, how do you always get the first question in a scrum?
That goes back to when Ron Wilson was coaching, and it might have been either that 0-6-1 start, or, but it was around when Ron first started, and the teams weren't very good. I mean, they were hovering around 500, at least in terms of wins and losses, but that's not going to get you close in the NHL. And I think it was a night in Florida, and the Leafs might have lost 7-0 or 7-1, and you know, let's just get this over with. I can see Ron coming out, and he would look at me and just, it was basically, get me out of this. Just get me out of this and just sort of steer the scrum in a certain direction as best you possibly can. And Bonesy's got a good line, you know, we lost 7-0, Ron, but so-and-so was, so-and-so was, so-and-so won 28 of 40 face-offs. And it wasn't quite that extreme, but it just started with Ron, and then it continued to do so because on a lot of nights, James and Jonas, that the Leafs weren't winning. Well, you know, they went through a stretch of prior to the 12-13 season where they made the playoffs in that sprint in the lockout year. They didn't make the playoffs 8 consecutive years. You get pretty good at storytelling because you're forced to, especially when you work for a network that is owned by the hockey club. So I think it started with Ron Wilson and just continued on for there. So that was basically 10, 11 years in the making with that first question.
All right. I got one more here. And the question is actually for Jonas. Bob Ritchie wants to know, who has the worst puns, James or Henny?
You're good, though, James. James,
you're pretty good, but Paul is, like, legendary. Like, the amount of times that I remember sitting on the bus. Yep. So the way it worked is, like, after road games, the media would have its own little bus, and then the team would have its own bus. And so those bus rides were just, like, the funniest place like you could imagine. Because Jim Ralph is, like, the funniest human there is.
He's a comedic genius.
Comedic genius. And all the time, Paul would insert these little puns. And I was like the youngest person on the bus by far, but I would always look at Paul and be like, no, come on, no, let's not do it. Yeah. You would just get a little grin on your face because you just loved trying to find something to like have a little fun with.
Yeah, and I'm trying to come off with some of the top of my head. It's, you know, Ralphie, what I'll remember about Ralphie, we'd come up with the all appliance team or the all the all-time farm team, and you know Jason Woolley and Mark Lamb, the Stahl brothers, and you need all the stalls because you've got so many animals, and I'd come up with Sammy Silo, like this sort of idiocy.
You guys were doing that in Edmonton. We were in Edmonton this year in December, and I'm pretty sure it was you. Anyway,
James, the drives from, say, a game in Tampa over to Florida, we would rent a car and drive cross state. And that's, you know, 3 hours, 40 minutes.
It's a dreadful
Joe Bowen driving, Nicole Burns backseat with Ralphie. We've got the licorice. We've got the treats. And Nicole is our producer, camera person, and a really talented woman. And for putting up with all of us and me sort of co-pilot with Joe up front in the you know, Ralphie with the theme music that we would play and we'd guess what the theme shows are. Well, I mean, for Joe, Jim, and I, it's easy, but like Nicole was in her 20s then. She had no idea what Magnum PI was about, or, you know, the original Mission Impossible, or the Beverly Hillbillies, or Car 54, Where Are You? But those drives cross state were rib-breaking laughter, and all of us contributing. And of course, the straw that stirred the drink was Ralphie. And as Beagle and I have said, just a comedic genius. And to be a part of that, where we sat on that team charter, Beagle, well, at one point, middle of the plane, but initially we were in the back end, out of harm's way, right by the galley. We had the run of the place back then, and it was magical. It was fun while it lasted, but obviously things don't last forever and we move on.
Okay, multiple of the questions are asking why you're leaving, so maybe you can address that. Just, I know you've talked about it a little bit, but fans are still curious to know.
Yeah, fair question. A year ago, what are we now, December? A year ago, September 24th, getting ready to fly to Detroit for the second last preseason game. My wife's had some health challenges with cancer, and she's her fifth year, but she'd had a recurrence, and I knew then that you don't take anything for granted time-wise, and she's doing well. She's a battler. She's doing extremely well. Modern medicine is really helped out, and great people down at Toronto General Hospital and Princess Margaret have been fantastic, working alongside her. But anyway, back then, I just thought this might be a good time. I don't need to be on the road for all these nights. I know in 25 years covering the Leafs, I worked it out to 8.5 years of time that we didn't spend together. Mm-hmm. And you know what? That's probably great for a marriage. Let's be honest. We don't have to be with our spouses 24/7. That's not good for anybody. But I just knew at this point in time that I don't want to take any chances of being on the road and when time could be limited. Now, it's not to say it is limited, but you go from checkup to checkup and make sure fingers are crossed. And I just want to let all people listening here, she's doing well. She's doing very well. But it was a decision back then, as I thought, in September, October, I think once this year is done, that maybe that's it. And as we progressed along, I knew in late January, the outdoor skate at Nathan Phillips, I remember saying to Big Daddy Bob McGill, this was fantastic. The adrenaline's going, the endorphins pumping, because you just feel so good about these events. But I said, I think I'm good. And this was before COVID hit, and then COVID did hit, and we had a chance really to think about it as time went on. And really from March 11th on, there wasn't anything going on other than, each other and all of that. And so that's it. I left for her, and she's an infectious disease doctor, and if things were perfect, I'm still covering the Leafs, and she's doing what she's doing, which is, in terms of her profession, this is the Stanley Cup final, and it's tough for her to be on the sidelines compared to where she would have been, given how important she was in the battle against SARS and a bunch of those other things. So we've turned the corner on that, and I'm happy doing what I'm doing. The podcast is a nice compromise. But again, it's not the same as seeing you guys on a regular basis and sharing bad puns and Jolly Rancher candies and red licorice.
We'll get together, Paul. When things go back to normal, we'll be we'll see you at the Yard House in LA there with one of those yard
with a tall one.
The yard beer that you like to drink there on the patio. I see you every time we're there. So
yeah, for sure.
No,
right next door to the Marriott.
We wish you all the best. We wish your wife all the best. And, my family's been through that. My mom has had cancer twice and beat it. So, Godspeed to you guys.
I appreciate that, James. And I know Jonas, what you never forget, Jonas will always sort of fire in a text every now and then. How's Alicia doing? How are things? And those things don't go unnoticed. They mean the world. And I know to some others, yesterday just talking with Cliff and his wife, Linda, after we taped our podcast, and Cliff and Linda just saying, hey, how's your wife doing? And Linda's been through and continues to endure some major health challenges as well. And so we're kind of in a similar boat. But, those things mean a lot. So I have no problem talking about it. And thanks for your kind words for both of you guys.
Yeah, we'll miss you. And we're going to keep in touch, and we'll have you back on. And people can obviously listen to The First Question with Paul Hendrick anywhere you get your podcast, right, Paul?
Well, I'll tell you one. We did Bruce Boudreau on Monday. It's going to come out January. Ooh. And he had a bunch of stories. And, of course, he played with Mark and Marty Howe. And the Marlies won two Memorial Cups. And he was talking about a time where the Wings had played Toronto the night before. Gordy stays overnight to watch his two boys play in the matinee at the Gardens the next day. Marlies win, as they always did. And Gordy comes into the room. He doesn't even go to the one side of the room where Mark and Marty are. He goes right to Bruce, grabs him by the scruff of the jersey and said, don't ever lie down on the ice again when you're hurt. You never let the other team know you're hurt. And then he put him down. And Bruce goes, wow. You just don't forget those stories.
Your stories are the best. I have so many more stories I want to tell with you. So maybe we'll do this again soon, Paul. Thank you for taking the time, and we love you.
Oh, love you back, guys. I appreciate that. And thanks for the love and the respect. I think about you guys often, and enjoy this year. And it's going to be a fun Canadian division. The Athletic will be kicking it big time.
All the best, Paul.
Thanks, Paul.
Thanks for doing this.
Thank you.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
All right, James, we're going to miss having Paul around, but he was such a big presence around the team and for the media. Like, I'm sure every media member who's covered the team at any point has like a good memory of Paul Hendrick. So it was fun to talk and reminisce with him.
Kind of makes you like a bit, I don't know, it makes me think about like getting older and like things always change. And this has been such a weird year. And, you know, it's almost like nothing is forever or something. And it makes you think about how long we've been around. And, you know, sometimes I think like, man, I felt like I was other than you and maybe Chris Johnson, I was the youngest guy there. And now I feel like I'm going to be one of the oldest guys there. And it goes by really fast. And I'm sure that's how Paul feels with 25 years. And, you know, but you know what, the other thing I was thinking too, when he was talking is, and you were talking about Paul, is like, There's a good lesson in there in the way that Henny is, and that, you know, we should carry that forward, and we should, you know, bring that kind of approach to the young people on the beat and be welcoming. And, you know, you don't have to go through, you know, some people in our business go through life with a chip on their shoulder or an ego or whatever. You can be successful and be the way Paul is. And, you know, it's good for him, and good for him for his decision. I think that that's family first.
Yeah. Well, we already did, like, you could feel it at the bubble. You miss like having him around to ask the first question, because it kind of always like broke the ice a little bit, especially after like tense games where he could just kind of get it started without any feeling of like antagonism from the coach. Like, the coach kind of understood that was kind of his thing.
Yeah. I mean, you know, some people I've seen have criticized Paul, you know, but, you know, he was doing his job, you know, and he was doing it well. And, you know, there are going to be team staff around, and there are going to be softball questions. But, you know, I think that he always did that role with integrity. So.
Absolutely. Well, it does look like we're getting closer to a potential season. So that's good. So we'll have actual tangible stuff to talk about really soon. So that's,
yeah,
I'm sure you're excited about training camp being
well
soon.
I would maybe like it to not be during my Christmas holidays, so maybe they can just push it back just a little bit. Like, they're talking about training camp starting, you know, on that weekend of like New Year's.
we'll see if that's logistically feasible. And, you know, it would be, I found covering the playoffs to be really strange, just with, you know, the way that the access was and not being able to interact with the players and not being able to, I don't know. I'm really looking forward. It's going to be good to have games back and things to talk about and things to write about, but, you know, sure can't wait for that vaccine to come. And I know, you know, people all over the world are feeling this way, and I'm sure everyone listening has their own story, but you get some normalcy back in 2021. There's a lot for us to look forward to here in the next, you know, 6 to 8 months.
Amen. All right. Well, James, this was fun. Do you have any parting thoughts?
We're going to do one more podcast next week, and then we're going to break for Christmas. So I don't know. We don't really have the guests lined up yet, right? We got a couple potentially big names that might be on our last show of 2020. So we're going to go out with a bang next week.
We got things in the works. Punches on it. All right, James. Well, this has been fun. Maybe next week you can do your top three favorite players to cover and least favorite.
Okay. Yeah, and I might go off the board a little bit.
I don't know who my least favorite are. Actually, no, I can come up with a couple.
I never had any problems with Nick Hagman. That one actually surprises me. Like, he wasn't, like, friendly, but I don't know. Anyway.
Maybe it was just, I always just think it was heat of the game with him. Like, he was very
intense.
Dialed in, and he didn't want to have anything to do with that. And I kind of get it.
Yeah.
So, anyway, thank you for everyone for listening, and continue health and stay safe, and we will talk soon.